Crystal Rutland about Design Week Portland 2018. And tomorrow morning, KBOO's Lisa Loving will host a live forum with candidates for the Portland City Council in the KBOO studio. Submit your questions on Facebook and we will ask the candidates live on the air. Tune in Wednesday at 9 a.m. right here on KBOO.
Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available by calling the station at 503-231-8032. The Finance Committee meets the fourth Monday of every month at 4:30. The April 19th meeting will be held at Cider Riot at 807 Northeast.
This is KBOO Portland. The time is 10 o'clock, and now it's time for Air Cascadia.
Greetings. Good morning, Cascadia. This is the Thanatoid Times Tribune, and it is Tuesday, April 17th, 2018. You are listening to KBOO Portland, Community Sanctuary Solidarity at 90.7 FM, KBOO.FM. Today's guest is Stephen Zunis. He's been a frequent guest. He is our go-to guy on all things Middle East. Of course, yes, others share that, certainly share that seat from time to time. There's a lot to be said, but Stephen Zunis has been consistent in his use of all possible information out there, and the elaborate Byzantine connections between nations and the characters' personalities. We are just going to briefly dash through the weather. Showers likely today at a high around 52. For tonight, chance of showers and lows around 41. Tomorrow looks like just about the same, a little bit warmer. And tomorrow night, lows around 40. These have been some very shaky days. If you are not, this is a classic, if you're not well terrified, then you're not paying attention. What really, really gets to me just before we start speaking with Stephen is that the absolute disconnect. People are very keen on keeping up with the news and checking in on all the different sites, all the blogs, and looking at all the videos and so forth, which is great. But it doesn't apparently, it hasn't got feet in the streets. It hasn't really engendered a massive tidal wave of letters and communications to elected representatives. That is what is needed. Instead, I think people seem to believe that if they are, staring at a computer screen somewhere, that somehow equates direct action. It doesn't. It doesn't matter how many friends you have who agree with you, unless you're all standing arm in arm, in the street with banners and speaking out. Then that might make a difference, but the rest of it is null and void. So we are speaking, as I said, with Stephen Zunis, and there are a number of articles, all which are relevant to the events right now in Syria. It's unspeakable what's going on. The first article I commend listeners' attention to is why the United States can't lead on Syria's chemical weapons atrocities. That would seem to be obvious, but it's far from obvious. And that is one of the problems, is Americans consistently, again and again and again, misjudge, misunderstand what's happening and react to something other than what we ought to be paying attention to. Good morning, Stephen. Thank you so much for being with us today.
Great being with you again.
Yeah, you must be a bit busy man these days. This is a particularly interesting piece that you have here. And the thing, too, here is that right now with Iran dragged into it and Israel, now you really have a tinderbox. How did this happen in just a few days? This is now it's really weaponized. This is hot. And it's
it's pretty clear that Assad's forces committed some kind of atrocity in Douma. I haven't seen evidence that it was necessarily sarin gas. It was probably chlorine gas, which is a terrible weapon, but not illegal under the Chemical Weapons Convention, and they've used it at least a dozen more times before, and rebels have used chlorine gas as well. This is political. I mean, this is an act of catharsis. Even putting aside the fact that this is illegal, a clear violation of the United Nations Charter, given the fact that there was no authorization, by Congress, making it unconstitutional, strategically, it does very little to limit the regime's ability to commit further atrocities. In fact, there's a fair amount of evidence that at least one of the sites was not a chemical weapons facility. It harks back to when Clinton bombed that pharmaceutical plant in Sudan, falsely claiming it was a chemical weapons factory back in 1998. But what I point out in this article, in the Progressive, an article that's going to be coming out shortly and in these times, is that the history of the U.S. involving chemical weapons is pretty spotty and pretty hypocritical. The United States, as I pointed out in the Progressive piece, blocked the establishment of a chemical weapons free zone, also, of course, biological nuclear weapons free zone, WMD free zone, whatever you want to call it, for the region, because it would force Israel and Egypt, which have vast chemical weapons arsenals, to disarm. This region-wide disarmament was required by the UN Security Council resolution 489, which required Iraq to disarm, and it was Iraq's alleged violation of this resolution, which in fact they were abiding by, that the Bush administration used to justify the 2003 invasion. But there was a provision in that said Iraq's disarmament of these non-conventional weapons would be part of a region-wide disarmament. The United States blocked the UN from enforcing that. In fact, when Syria had a non-permanent seat on the Security Council back in December 2003, they introduced a resolution to push this idea of region-wide disarmament of non-conventional weapons, and the United States blocked it. And it only raises speculation that, again, this is well before the Civil War, that had there had been part of a region-wide disarmament, that Syria would have indeed gotten rid of all of these weapons and weapons facilities, and the horrors that happened in Al Ghouta and in Khan Sheikhoun would have never happened. Then there's the fact that the United States, when Iraq used chemical weapons against Iranians, affecting 100,000 Iranian troops with 20,000 deaths using chemical weapons, the United States was providing Iraq with the raw materials for these weapons through foreign aid, which included pesticides and insecticides and fertilizers, with the full knowledge that they were being converted into chemical weapons. In fact, there were U.S. officials from the Defense Intelligence Agency on the ground downloading a satellite footage of Iranian troop concentration and passing those on to the Iraqi armed forces in the full knowledge that they were targeting them with chemical weapons. And then when Saddam used chemical weapons in Halabja, that Kurdish town in northern Iraq, that killed 5,000 civilians, the U.S. tried to cover it up, falsely claiming Iran and the preferred enemy for the atrocity. And so for the United States to get all huffy about, use of chemical weapons is an outrage, therefore that gives us the right to bomb Syria, is just a height of hypocrisy. Not to mention the fact that the United States has provided allies like Turkey, Saudi Arabia, and Israel with conventional weapons, which have killed many, many thousands of civilians, far more than Assad, or Saddam for that matter, has killed with chemical weapons. And so you get to see that this is that even if you agree that the U.S. that Assad's atrocities gives the U.S. right to bomb, which I don't believe,
yeah,
but
could.
Even if you do, it's clear the United States is not in a position to take leadership on these kinds of questions.
So is this something that Bolton cooked up and presented to Trump, saying, of course, that it'll make Trump look good? What are they going to have this time? Maybe a lemon cream pie instead of the chocolate cake this time around.
I think my guess is what would have happened regardless of Bolton. That Bolton is indeed a very scary character. I mean, this is foreign policy by catharsis. I mean, and again, this is not strategically, this doesn't act as a much of a deterrent or a means of weakening their capability. I think it's a distraction from the scandals encircling the administration, which has led some people to refer to this as Operation Desert Stormy.
yes.
And of course, the fact that Britain and France took part has given the Trump administration some cover. But remember that both Macron of France and May of Great Britain, while not facing serious scandals per se, are also quite unpopular at home. And again, this is a convenient wag the dog kind of situation to distract public opinion from their domestic failings.
But unfortunately, see, it would appear to be mostly negative public opinion. I've got a question, another question about catharsis. But right now, but before, I'm always running out of time. But Iran and Israel. Was that expected? I just can't imagine Trump because that does up the ante and that does complicate
everything. The Syrian regime, because of massive defections from the armed forces in the early especially when they were crushing the opposition back when it was nonviolent in the early months of the struggle, but even later on, they may have had a hard time surviving without the support of Iranian-backed militia, including some Iranian forces. This, of course, so they played a major role in propping up the regime, and of course that leads Israel to freak out that you have Iranian forces on their borders and Hezbollah with strengthened military arms and military things. So they have gotten involved in increasingly, and along with the Saudis and Gulf states and Turkey and et cetera, this has become a proxy war of the worst kind. And it was bad enough when it was just Syrians killing each other, but all this foreign involvement, including the Russians and the United States and others, just has ended up increasing the suffering as it becomes a proxy war. Reminds me of the African proverb, when elephants fight, it's the grass that gets trampled. And it's the Syrian people who are suffering because of these kinds of foreign interventions. And now the United States is saying, oh, we should keep troops in there. And it looks like Trump is backing off on his pledge to withdraw. We've got to keep troops in there, even though ISIS has largely been defeated, because we need to be a counter to greater Iranian influence. And while I had some questions about U.S. involvement, even when the target was primarily ISIS, the idea that we can somehow stay inside a country's sovereign territory against the will of their government because we don't like who their
their neighbors.
They're lying with,
yeah.
in terms of strategically, is a gross violation of international law, and I see it as a classic kind of imperialist exercise.
It is. It quite clearly is. And the obsession of Bolton's, to me it seems to be the very dangerous point is John Bolton's obsession with bombing Iran, which he's wanted to do, expressed a desire to do for years and years. And the Iranian people taking sides in this thing right from the get-go, it seems a big mistake. But taking sides is a mistake, and signing, if you're going to take sides, signing with Saudi Arabia is a really huge mistake. The Iranian people like Americans. I was there. And even very recently, I don't know about right now, but probably not. But the Iranians are like American people, and yep. the what's happening is clearly dragging everyone, weirdly enough, kicking and screaming. We have to let you go now. Unfortunately, I'd like to have you back later in the week, because it's obviously this is. The beginning of we don't know what, I guess. Catharsis is probably the best way to describe it, as you have. We'll put links and whatnot on the website so that listeners can find these articles. The one that I'm going through right now is why the United States can't lead on serious chemical weapons atrocities. The United States doesn't seem to be able to lead on much right now. And probably it's better that way, very likely. Thank you once again, Stephen Zunis, and we'll speak with you again very soon. This has been a Cascadia for Tuesday. I think I might have said Monday. For me, it's Monday. Tuesday, April 17th, 2018. And Ray engineered our show for us today. Derek Crooks is our AM News and Public Affairs Director. I'm Chris Andrew. Get the facts. Know your rights. Take a stand, preferably in the street. Thanks.